Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show, July 24th, 2011. So anyway, we're going to go ahead here and continue on with last week's brand new. This was a virgin tape, never been played before, so we're rewound it a little bit.
78, wearing one of my power domes, which is a pyramid you wear on your head made out of titanium.
You wear a pyramid on your head?
Yeah, I had those. You haven't ever seen them? I invented them back in the mid-70s.
Actually, I had a friend of mine who would wear one to school.
Yeah, we had them all over the world. Well, we had them tested. I mean, you can do all kinds of tests, physical tests, and you can see all kinds of changes in the human body. They detoxify the brain. I've got testimonies from the Orchid Union school system up at San Luis Obispo. This one kid, Stan Alms, had brain mal seizures. He started wearing the pyramid, doesn't get them anymore, because the pyramid allows your body to heal. Because there's an obstruction, he was taking lithium like they always give him on grand mal seizures, and we put the pyramid on, no more grand mal seizures.
Well, what is it about the pyramid shape that does that, Fred?
Well, that's shape energy. Hello, that's where we started, isn't
it? Yeah.
If you were to take and rub your hands together really fast in front of me, just like you're going to clap your hands, but mm-hmm. just rub them, and then you pull them apart, you'll feel like an energy between them, right? And if you were to take a pyramid after you rub your hands together and pull them apart, and instead of not having your palms of your hands facing each other anymore, to feel this ball of energy and turn them straight up and hold a pyramid over that, you would find that the pyramid would amplify that kind of a tingling effect, even though your hands aren't facing each other anymore, they're going straight up, because it's a life force. And if you were to take a piece of litmus paper and put it in acid or an alkaline solution and watch and monitor the change of it and put a pyramid over it, it would go to a perfect pH of about 7.5. So the first thing you find out is this shape, this geometric shape, augments magnetic fields. Even though it could be made out of wood, it'll still do the same thing. It augments them, not by the metal. Now, in magnetism, big rule of physics is, hello, steel, magnets, you know, wire, that's where your magnetic field goes. But a piece of wood shaped like a pyramid will augment a magnetic field, not where you'll see it with a compass, but you'll see it in something like pH, potential hydrogen, in some solution that's underneath it. You put milk inside of a pyramid, it turns into cheese. It doesn't get, you know, bacterial infections or bacterial destruction.
And the Egyptians knew this too, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they knew it. They never found any, any bodies in pyramids, but all the embalming process, you know, they would drain the blood, put tannic acid in, which is a great preservative. Tannic acid, where the veins were, I mean, the veins and arteries now are full of that, put them in the pyramid for a few days, which would cause the body not to deteriorate anymore. And the Egyptians weren't trying to resurrect in their bodies, they were trying to say, to give the value of life by preserving the form. It was like they were trying to say, be here now, enjoy each moment. And only the kings and queens supposedly were embalmed like that, but of course the priests always snuck themselves in. That Marathena's pyramid in the big three over there where the Great Pyramid is one built later by a priest, you know?
Yeah.
Right, taken care of by it. So there's a whole lot of politics that we could go into another.
Well, tell me about some of these devices that they gave you plans for.
Well, you said you didn't
know what you were building?
No, absolutely not. Are you kidding? I had no idea. All I was a NASA scientist with an esoteric hobby, you know, the Great Pyramid. I had no clue what I was doing. You know, how did we get them on the head, people wearing them on? There was a doctor, John P. started kinesiology, and he got Dr. Parker in, and Dr. Parker got my friend Gary Couture. Dr. Parker is head of all the chiropractors. He's a chiropractor guy. So Gary Couture was a chiropractor, one of these avant-garde guys down here, starting out back when, what's his name, Warner Earhart started S, and my other buddy, Malcolm Brooklyn, was involved, made the Brooklyn car. We were a crazy new age bunch of crazy
mm-hmm,
guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's my old running crowd. So Gary Couture is over there, and he asked me one day, he says, I wonder what pyramids would do. And I says, I don't know, on people's heads, because he thought about putting them on their heads. Because we were just thinking growing shrimp and stuff. And so, you know, we take shrimp and you put them on the pyramid, they grow 10 times quicker. And you know, all that stuff. I made science kits like that. So Gary started doing kinesiology tests where you have a person lay on their back, put their arms straight up, and test for vitamin C, calcium. You push on the body where these parts are using John C's technique. And you test strong, weak. You put a bottle of vitamin C on the person, they test strong in a place where they're weak. So he found that if you put the pyramid on their heads or on their body, they test as strong for everything.
Immediately?
Yes, immediately. And then some idiot over in Las Vegas, one of these, you know, these guys that like to make, you know, those videos, to sell stuff.
Yeah.
He found out that if you wore a pyramid on your head, testing the urine, the vitamin C was 5 times more concentrated in your body than it normally would be. So you got 500% assimilation taking vitamin C. In other words, you take vitamin C, drink water, an hour later you urinate so much vitamin C. Well, the pyramid on the concentration in the body remained much higher. So all these kind of studies came along, and that's how we learned all this stuff. I didn't know what I was
doing. Now, how did they give you the plans?
Well, they did. They just gave me the ideas. You know, they said...
Telepathy?
Well, not really. It's more of a...
Tell me. They hand it over to you, or what?
Well, no. Here's how it works. You know, with Sannyasi, the first thing that happens is I get a sexual energy feeling. You know, like I'm looking at Playboy or something, but there's no Playboy there. I mean, just... The sexual feeling, that's what I would get. Then the hair on my arm would rot, go standing up. So I had a couple of physical things happen, and then I have my own, like you're thinking right now, and you got your own, well, then suddenly there'd be a woman's voice in my head next to my thought, and I could think a thought in my head with this physical stuff going on, and the female voice would answer.
Okay.
I don't know if you ever tried one of Pat Flanagan's neurophones. But the best thing I can think is that you put the probes on the bottom of your feet and it sends sound up through your system, up into your ears, even though you can't hear. You can hear it in your head.
I haven't tried that.
Well, you know what they are, right?
Yeah, I've heard of them.
Okay, well, what an earphone is, I was one of the guys that finally gave them to deaf people. You know, at the bottom of your feet, you got nerves that go right to the brain
right. That
conduct sound. So you can take a radio station and put it on the earphone. Stand on the probes, and it'll go into your head, and you'll hear it, just like you had ears, but you don't, you're deaf. Okay?
All right.
That kind of effect is what Sannyasi's voice would be like, because if you're listening to a music on a neurophone, you have to interpret it. Well, that means your thoughts are interpreting what you're hearing through the neurophone. You follow me?
I'm with you.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Okay. And yeah. So these plants, were these very highly technical devices?
They got pretty...
I mean, the pyramid wasn't.
Detector. You know that earthquake detector, which is by... I don't know if you saw it or not. That's pretty high-tech because it has to have a particular Josephine Junction, which was developed over at IBM by John Carter. It was a friend of mine, John Carter, who's the guy that started it, and his son. There's a thing called a Josephine Junction, which works something like a tunnel dial, and it actually... It's kind of like a time machine. And when an earthquake starts to happen, you take quartz crystals, like quartz, like, you know, these big quartz crystals.
Yes.
And you put an electron on each end with, like, gold plate at the end of it. So there's lots of gold on each end of it. You can sense a piezoelectric change within that quartz crystal. When you take that piezoelectric change that goes in the quartz crystal and put it in what's called a Wheatstone bridge with Josephine Junctions as the balancing arms of the bridge, it sets up a frequency and you can measure earthquakes. It's the technology that came up. So that stuff is more sophisticated. It measures an earthquake before it starts, I'm trying to say. It predicts it, in other words. That kind of stuff is more technologically oriented. The time machine that Art... The first time I went on the show here was with Art talking about the time machine. He was a fanatic about that. That was a more higher complex thing. The spaceship, what we call virtual field generators, that make you go into hyperspace in my book, Raise the Truth, that's higher technology stuff they gave me, but it's useless. All that stuff is great. I threw it in the back of the book to let people know it was there and they could play with it, but it's useless in a world that's going for self-destruction in the next 9 years. You know, so we gotta do things for our body, our immune system, so that's my focus, so that's been their focus, too. I've learned so much about the human body that they don't teach in books, you know, from the Pleiadians and how cells work and how the DNA works and how chromosomes come and go and the frequency of them, how the DNA despirals itself, you know, over the period of a lifetime, and you can predict all these things and how you can respiral it, what the receptor does, the DHEA stuff that we use, the vitamins that are formulated.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned all this stuff, and luckily, because I became a public figure, I've been able to work with millions of people all over the world and get feedback. My whole learning process is mostly from feedback, but, you know, after a while, you get a lot of feedback doing it for 28 years.
Okay, well, we're going to pause for this quick break, but Fred, get up to the Coast to Coast AM website, because there is one of your devices on the website, And tell me exactly how that works when we come right back and what that does. And then we'll talk a little bit about, of course, your thoughts on the words, of course, receptor and projector and what that all means as well. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Subscribe to the After Dark newsletter online at www.coasttocoastam.com. Just click through the orange type to the secure server.
Some of the technology that was passed on to Dr. Fred Bell by the police hens. Find out what it does, how it works. We tell you a little bit about the After Dark newsletter, where you can get a free 4-page insert on the life and work of Father Malachi Martin, the late Father Malachi Martin, as well as a free CD, one of Art Bell's earlier interviews with a beloved Catholic priest, this one on exorcisms. All you have to do is subscribe to the After Dark newsletter, and it's yours, and it will be number one of a series of collector item CDs. Here is the phone number to order After Dark and give Dark and give the CD 3 to 5 weeks to follow behind. 1-888-727-5505. 1-888-727-5505. Then the other way, of course, is right on the website, coasttocoastam.com. Fred, on the Coast to Coast AM website, which we downloaded off of your Paradigm.com website, nuclear receptor, what is that?
A nuclear receptor is a device that slows down the despiraling process of the DNA and allows the body to process poisons. One of the tests we do is you hold your arm straight out and have somebody push it down and determine how strong that arm is.
Mm-hmm.
Take a tube of glue. I don't recommend you do this at home, but have them breathe the glue and they test weak. Put the receptor on them with a tube of toxic glue. They're breathing it, holding her arm out, and they actually test stronger than they did without the glue wearing the receptor. That's one of the, what I call it, more risque tests, but it actually demonstrates the point. It allows you to process poison, and that's what pretty much everybody has to do. And more or less, kind of become empowered by it, not weakened by it, but not recommended, but that's the bottom line what it does.
How does it work?
Well, it works on the hydrogen atom. When you get one, we have color charts. We test you for one of seven different frequencies that would be weak. The entire seven levels of consciousness of the endocrine system, is which is triggered off of the hydrogen atom, because the hydrogen atom is the atom that brings in consciousness.
Are these the same colors that one's aura might be?
Well, the aura is determined by the most predominant synapsing frequency at any given time. For example, if your pituitary action is very strong, you'll have a red aura. And if it's weak, then you need red, then we put a ruby on the receptor and you'd wear it. If your thyroid action is very strong, you'll project a green aura. Or if the base of your spine, the lower part of your body is powerful, it'll be amethyst, it'll be violet. Okay, so with the human body, these different organs are constantly intermingling, intermeshing with each other.
Okay.
And so what happens is you get a multitude of frequencies. And where we start to look, I don't know if you know, I helped develop Carilion photography in the world.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, I did. I wrote the first books on it. A friend of mine over at Stanford and I, we did it back in the early mid-70s. And then we took it to Europe. We took S.D. Carilion's original work. I wrote a book called Death of Ignorance, which really goes into it. And then I licensed that book out, and a lot of people wrote these aura books. So I really got into aura studies at a very, you know, at the infancy of it. And what we used to look for was holes in the aura. And what we used to do is we made a small camera that you put your hand inside of. We'd have you think a positive thought, a negative thought, and a neutral thought. And we could tell, because each one of your fingers represents all the organs in the body, and by looking at, you know, a discharge around your finger, maybe an absence of discharge around your finger would tell us, take us to a particular area of the body. And that was the foundational work that we did to develop the nuclear receptor, I might add. And so the color stuff, we got into that later on when we got into a higher bandwidth film. As Polaroid started to develop more and more better films, then we were able to interpret color. And so it just kind of went from one step to the other. Because the original S.D. Carilion camera, you laid down on a piece of film that was, you know, it's like a blanket.
Almost like an x-ray, except you're on top of it?
Right, exactly. And the way that the Carilion cameras work is that they ground, the aura provides a grounding step, because you're dealing with high voltage here. Okay, you're putting a high voltage electrostatic charge on your fingertips, usually through an insulator, through a piece of plastic, so you don't get a shock. And so what happens is the voltage is on one side of the plastic, and your body's on the other side of the plastic. As the ground, the voltage is grounded through the plastic by the grounding. So what we're looking at in the body is grounding, okay?
Okay.
If you have a nerve or a synapse a set of nerves that are open, they're broken, they're full of antigens or poisons or clogged, it shows up as an absence of grounding. So therefore you have a hole in the aura. That's how it started. Then we got into color, because now we can modulate the frequencies. Like when I used to work with Peter Tompkins, we did a book called The Secret Life of the Plants, and we used to do spectrum analysis of plants. Not AC/DC or ohm, you know, measuring with an ohm meter plants, but actual spectrum analysis. We used to use the Hewlett-Packard spectrum analyzer. And so we could get a full bandwidth of frequencies in a plant. Well, the same thing with the human body. And obviously, when you look at a whole bandwidth of frequencies in the human body, you know, you're going to see colors, because what is light, what is electromagnetic frequency, is absolutely color across one part of the spectrum. So that will be added color to the original black and white photography that was done. So, we had a lot of fun with it.
Okay, so is this a necklace that you wear? What do you do
with it? Yeah, it's a necklace that you wear after you find out what color that you need.
Okay, now how do we know that?
We do a muscle test. We either push your arm down, or have you take your thumb and your forefinger and have somebody, you know, pull your finger apart and have you hold a different color stone or a different color receptor. We have these little kits, and that tells us where you're weak. Whatever one you're weak, whatever color you're weak in is the one you need. And then what happens is when you wear it on your body, your body starts changing the integrity of the cellular reproduction changes, meaning that your cells are better now, because instead of your cells getting weaker and weaker and weaker to the point where telomeres is the end result of DNA and the cell quits altogether, it makes the cell last longer. So you see it, and we start looking at body groups of cells. The first area that's infected by the receptor is the quickest group to decay. That's the red blood cell. The red blood cell completely changes itself out like a self-oil change in 90 days. So wearing a receptor for 90 days will change the chemical constituency of your blood. The next thing, of course, we go into the skin, and the next thing we go into the all the way to the bones, which takes 7 years. So what happens is, in a 7-year period, instead of your body degenerating like it normally would because the toxicity, toxicity of the planet and the electromagnetic and the scalar waves and all these negative things that go on in ELF, your body slows down and starts processing better, so you start seeing a change in your body.
Now the shape of the necklace, the round part, looks like a parabola. Is that on purpose?
Yes, right. And there's pyramids that are right side up, and there's pyramids that are upside down. If you test somebody, if you put a pyramid on somebody's head, right side up, and put their arm out, it's strong. You turn it upside down, they'll test weak. Because what happens is, it forms a yin and yang energy field, or what's called the chi forces in the body are affected.
Are those little pyramids that I see inside of it?
Yeah, they're little pyramids inside, and they're upside down and right side up.
Okay.
And so one puts out a yang field, one puts out a yin field, and they meet in the center where the bridge is. The upside down ones are the yin field, the bottom ones on the bottom are yang, and the right and left are yin and yang, and their energies meet in the center, a focal point, and that's where the gemstone is.
Okay, and what's the purpose of the gemstone?
The gemstone acts as a filter. That's all it is a filter. And it takes this energy, this yin and yang, this chi force, it filters it to one color frequency and sends it back radionically through that little hole in the back of it, which you might not be able to
see. You can't see the hole, okay.
And it goes out through a Yanan mantram, which is on the back of there's a focusing device on the back of the receptor you can't see, and that goes into one field of influence on your body, of your aura. In other words, one magnetic field line of flux is affected. Now, that's when it becomes a radionic or a homeopathic device, meaning that in homeopathy, if you want to make something strong, let's say you've got a substance of and water. You got 10 times the amount of water and a little bit of the substance. That's a 10x.
Yes.
To make it 100x, you don't put more of the substance. You dilute the water 100 times. And that makes it 100 times more stronger. And that's the science of radionics and homeopathic medicine. And homeopathic medicine is like cures like, so you use poison to cure your poison.
Can you change out, or do they change out, the gemstone?
Do in the silver ones, the platinum ones, and the gold ones that we make. Because we make about a different metal. I got to tell you this. The silver, platinum, and gold ones also become radioactive. You have to take them off and rinse them off. They absorb radiation out of the body. There is so much radiation in the air because we have had nuclear bombs blasted on this planet. This is one example. Since World War II, about 1,000 bombs have gone off. Radiation is everywhere, and it's in the water table.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Yeah. So what happens is we become radioactive. Now, if we become radioactive, the first places in the human body to break down is the prostate and the mammary gland. The mammary gland is breast cancer, and the prostate is prostate cancer, if you're sensitive to those kinds of things. So when you wear the receptor, it lowers the risk of these possibilities happening, but you've got to keep rinsing the thing off because it becomes radioactive. If you don't, it feels like a little lead weight around you.
Is this something you can wear under your clothes?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
You can wear it anywhere you want, but under your clothes is the best place, and around your neck is good because it keeps it, you know, lined up north and south and east and west and all the things that make it work the best.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay, so what the proceptor and receptor?
Well, you mean the projector?
Projector.
The projector is a different kind of, it's a holographic device. A hologram works like this. If you, if you're making a prayer, okay, that prayer produces a scalar wave to the end. Let's say you pray, you want to have a new car, okay? That produces a scalar wave, but it takes, say, 3 months to get the car, meaning that the universe says, okay, you can have this new car, but you got to inherit the car, you got to win the lottery, you got to get a job, whatever it takes to get the car. Events have to take place. But the fact is the scalar wave was made. Secondly, if you go to church and say the church wants the car for the church, 10,000 people are now joining in prayer. Well, the scalar wave is a little bit more dense. You start a company like IBM. We made an earlier example. The starter, like John Carter Sr., wanted the idea. He had employees. He made a product. That was a thought form. Okay, that was a scalar wave. The universe is made up of lots and lots of these scalar waves. They're called wave packets. Okay, they're all over the place. The projector works on these wave packets by going in and taking the negative energy out of any kind of a wave packet. So in other words, this holographic device gets rid of negative energy. So for example, if you had cancer, okay, the receptor would help you get rid of the cancer, but if you put the projector on, it would eliminate the source, the source of maybe past life, karma, whatever, of the source of the poison that caused you to have cancer in the first place. So the cancer would be gone, but it would still be in your body as a residual, but you'd never, like, get it anymore. So the projector works as a device that's like an amulet that's been here for a long time. In many different centuries and over many, many different millennia, we've always had these things called amulets, which somehow or other would have a, you know, look at the crown jewels in England. That had an effect on the growth of England. There's this effect that happens here. The projector happens to be something. We only have like 9 years left before this world ends, so the projector, the technology behind that, will cause negative things to go away, not in linear time, but in nonlinear time, by rearranging these wave packets. So what happens is, this is the type of technology that will save this world, allow this world to move on, and we call that divine intervention. Okay? So it comes up, it's not a religious thing, it just happens to be a scientific thing that has a religious name. And so the projector is a little bit different than the receptor. It actually makes your body invisible to these negative forces. And it's another way explain it. But we won't let anybody have a projector unless they have a receptor, because by itself, it's not healthy to wear it. You've got to have something mopping up, even though it's getting rid of the source of negativity. By using a projector, getting rid of negativity before it ever existed in the first place is holograph. It's how a holograph works. So it's kind of hard for people, because we think, well, there was a negative energy and then there was the result. But if we go out to the result and eliminate the negative energy, then the result doesn't exist. And this causes a compression in time. So time will appear to speed up. When this technology comes into play, time will go faster and faster because there's less negative reciprocation, more positive reciprocation. When positive energy is there, things just go fast.
Now, is this Pleiadian technology?
No, that's Andromedan technology. The projector is Andromedan technology. The Andromedans live a lot longer. They have a different lifespan than Pleiadians. Pleiadians are karmic beings. They can only give us a certain amount of technology, and they have to stand back. They gave us a transistor. They gave us a lot of different things that, over the period of time that we have in our computers now. A lot of them came from Motorola engineers down in Mexico that were contactees. I wasn't the only one. But Pleiadians cannot stop a war. Andromedans can come in and make everything change instantly because they have that power. So you can look at it as a hierarchy. There's certain levels of beings. They're not God. They're not man. They're just higher level of intelligence. And when these intelligence levels start communicating, Andromedans bring in the science of the hologram, the science of creation, you know, destruction, all these things, all in one, no karma involved. It's just complete instantaneous alignment. And why do they do that? Because they have to, because we're getting so misbehaved that we act like we become radionically influential on the cosmos, where there's lots and lots of other worlds out there. We become homeopathically affecting all of these different things. Because the Earth, it does have an effect, humanity does have an effect, and there's a certain point where zero tolerance is going to happen. I mean, it's in every Bible, every religious book, everything all says, basically, end of times, end of days, we know it's about the year 2013.
Can these cure everything, or you know, are there some things that are just so far-fetched they're just not going to help?
But no, the technology behind the projector is an absolute thing that will work holographically. If there will be improvements on this technology, other people will understand it and make more things happen, but it's the beginning, it's the root of what the race will be all about. That's where the word root race comes from. The receptor has a patent on it. The projector will have one pending as soon as we finish the drawings for the patent office. This leads to more and more ideas and exploration. I'm writing a book on the projector as we speak, and holographic stuff. I've never written on holograph to the world like I have my other things, because the world isn't ready to learn about that. And most of the time, when people talk about holograms, they're pretty dismal, because they really don't understand scalar wave packets, they don't understand how energy works, and they don't even understand virtual field technology, which is so important, which is another show at another time. But there's all these different things that you have to look at to really understand how these things work. And so we can't do it in 3 hours.
No, I understand.
But I'll tell you one thing, George. You're fabulous guiding me through this stuff. You really hook up. I'm really impressed.
Well, that's okay. By the way, I'm looking at your picture on the website.
Oh.
I know Art's got a sister. I don't know if he's got a brother, but I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
You got to be as close to looking like him as anybody I've ever seen.
Yeah, I know we do look alike, don't we?
It's uncanny.
He's taller. I'm only 6 feet, though. Isn't Art taller?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think he's taller. Yeah, I think he's like 6'2 or something. I'm not sure, but...
Uncanny.
Yeah. I know. Just the energy, you know.
Even your mustache looks a little like his.
Yeah, it's the same mustache. My hair's a little longer. I still look the same. You know, I'm pretty much looking like that picture.
Are you still visited? Or are you still in communication?
Yeah, I am. And it's getting insane again. I do a lot of digital photography work now, and I'm starting to photograph strange things I don't quite see. Really, it's getting very intense again. It was very dead for quite a while. As a matter of fact, after I left the National Health Federation, which was, I was with for 20 years, where Sean Morton's mother is president of it now, I quit doing circuit lectures, and I did your show and a couple others. I've been like recluse for 4 years, working on this projector technology. And I have seen some, what you would call miracles recently from what the things we've done behind the scenes. So I'm coming out of the closet, going back out on the scene again. So I will be doing the public circuit again.
When we come back, I've got to ask you about 2012, 2013, to see what you might know, Fred, all right? And because as everyone knows, that's the end of the Mayan calendar. Last night's guest, Adrian Gilbert, talks about really a calamity here. I want to get Dr. Fred Bell's take on that. And I'll tell you what, we'll open up the phone lines as well. We'll give you an opportunity to chat with him, too. So we'll be back in a moment. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Tonight's guest, log on to coasttocoastam.com.
Fast forward to the end and go to tape two. December 10th, 2003. This is tape two of two.
Dr. Fred Bell, my guest, and I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Fred, you're not a medical doctor, though, right?
No, homeopath.
Okay.
PhD.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
The Grays, let me ask you one quick question about them. Because I'm getting a lot of messages from people who want to know how they can fight them off in the event they ever stumble across them. Is there anything you can do?
Well, we make a device called a flamethrower, the nuclear receptor changes. Main thing is, you know, like a moth flies to the flame or ant sense sugar.
Yes.
You change the frequency of your local environment. That's one of the things the receptors that do, the nuclear receptors do, is keep them, they're not interested. You know, the chance of getting an implant or abduction is far less wearing this crazy Pleiadian device. It really does do that. We have some heavier duty things called flamethrowers, which go up in your house. We have a device called a star orb that goes in your house. We use it for ELF. When you, for example, you know, ELF, that comes in through your power line.
Yes.
You probably know that.
Yes.
And the first thing that you can really notice the difference if you get that out of your house is your refrigerator. If you connect one of our star orbs to your refrigerator, food won't go bad in it near as fast. It'll last 3 to 4 times longer, including orange juice, fresh squeezed orange juice. I can get it to last a month. So that demonstrates right off the bat that there's something going on here. So we have a whole different variety of devices with that book that you're reading explains, and a lot of things that are newer that's been created since that book was written. Because the book's actually a 99 thing now. It really got going in the year 2000, but my gosh, it's 2004. It's time for Dr. Fred to crank another book out, you know?
Well, you know, I was going to say, it's like a health book, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is the beginning. It's like a health book in the front, an energy book in the middle, and a realm of possibilities in the back of what you can do if you got your health and energy working.
I'll tell you what, the propulsion systems for the craft, have you ever been aboard one of these?
Yes, I have. And not only have I been aboard on them, but I've helped at NASA. We were working on some of that stuff. Alan Holt had some of that stuff, came from him. We were working on some things over there. At NASA Ames, if you look at the B-2 bomber, where it goes supersonic, that was the project that I discovered when NASA approached me from Ames or up Moffett Field up there in the Bay Area. They came down here and they asked me to get better gas mileage for a jet airliner. They were looking at, you know, conserving fuel, and I came up with a negative and positive electrostatic field across the leading and trailing edge of a jetliner, including the tail surfaces. And I used the jet engines as an ion source. And when I presented that to them, they freaked out. And I found out they were using that exact system in the B-2 to get rid of wind resistance to make it go fast. And I don't know, I guess they were just trying to take me on a circle jerk or something to see if I still had my old moxie or not. And the guy over at Aviation Weekly picked up on it, and they wrote a big article. It was a real interesting thing. That's just one chapter in that book. So there's a lot of craziness in there, a lot of things that have been kicked around. But that virtual field technology is the neatest stuff. That's how those spaceships move across space and time. You know, virtual field technology is about mocking up energy. Like, for example, if you took a picture of what a butterfly is, and then you were to take that image and start projecting that more and more under the wall, pretty soon the butterfly would be attracted to it because the energy would be so great. And it's like if you took a picture of where you are now and a picture of where you wanted to be,
mm-hmm.
all you would have to do is take the picture of where you wanted to be and push that into a chamber and amplify that energy, and then pretty soon you would be in that other place. That's called virtual field technology.
I'm going to be in a couple weeks taking part in a time travel experiment.
Yeah.
And what I'm beginning to find out about it is it includes something that has to do with sound. I've got to wear something around my ears.
Yeah.
And also a fluttering of the eyes. So I'm thinking it's more hypnosis or regression.
Yeah, well, we did that back in 1958 at the University of Michigan. That's when I first started doing that kind of stuff. That's how I got into MKUltra. I got into time travel technology, and I found out when you go forward, there is no future. You know, you go into a black void, and I also found out that the future, you know, the astral plane is a series of possibilities. Energy follows thought. It makes sense.
Right.
It's just a, you know, conglomeration of the best thought forms that are the most harmonious for whatever the avenue of action is.
Is there any downside here for me?
No, not with that stuff. No, it'll be good for you. It'll detox your body, and it'll be fun. I'd go for it, but it's not...
Well, it doesn't fry my brain.
When you start flooding your eyes, then you're playing around with that occipital parietal lobe, and this is your astral body, and this is called REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what you're playing with, and that'll give you an astral sensation. That'll be a lot of fun.
You know? Fun?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll have you do it instead of me.
No, I don't. I've already done it. I don't need to.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to our first-time caller line. Welcome to Coast to Coast Around with Dr. Fred Bell. Hi there.
Hi there, George. I love you. Love
Thank
the
you.
Show.
Well, welcome aboard.
Been listening for a while.
Good.
My question for Mr. Dr. Bell is, does he know anything about Gardner's theory on the monatomic gold?
Not really. I've never got into that at all, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know Wayne Green talked about monatomic gold, and also Lawrence Gardner has talked about that.
Yeah.
And it has just incredible medicinal properties to it.
Oh, you mean by putting it in your system?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, I work with colloidal silver and all that kind of. I've done a lot of formulation along those ways. Yeah, when I understand where you're coming from now. Those are trace minerals. Trace minerals activate the parasympathetic nervous system, which doesn't get fed normally, and it makes your immune system go nuclear. So it's obviously a good thing. You know,
it boosts the immune system.
Yeah, sets your consciousness. It raises consciousness. That's why there's a gold standard. But, I mean, yeah, when you start putting, you know, you're talking about assimilative gold, things that can be actually assimilated into the system.
Right.
Egyptians used to eat it like that, you know. I mean, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I could go on about that for a while, but, I mean, you pretty much probably know about it anyway now.
Well, yeah, the FDA doesn't approve it.
Well, they never, you know what the first antibiotic ever approved in the United States by the FDA was?
Was it the silver colloid?
Yeah, colloidal silver, but you know the biggest no-no about it is people try to make it in their laboratories, you know, at home, and if you don't have a filter, a micron filter, to make it 0.01 microns, you go home and you stick two electrodes to the silver, you know, nitrate solution, you end up making this colloidal silver, but it destroys you because your body, it just jams up your entire capillary system and all your...
Oh, God.
I'm serious. You've got to be careful with that stuff. It's danger, danger, danger. You've got to filter it. Most people don't have the money to do these micronic filters that are necessary to do colloidal silver.
And I'm told that it can turn you gray, literally gray.
It will. It totally will. It totally will. Because it stops up the liver and the kidneys. And when you start stopping the kidneys, you start turning colors. Trust me.
Now I have a theory about the grays. They lack something.
Well, check about it. They have no alimentary canal. And they absorb through their arms and legs by, you know, by skin, like an osmosis thing with their skin.
Like a frog?
Yeah, and they don't smell very good either, by the way.
The Mayan calendar, some say it ends 2012. You talk around 2013.
Yeah.
Are you in agreement with most that whatever happens is not going to be good?
Well, I'm a very practical. I'm a pragmatist about the future. Back when I had a show on KFOX out here in Long Beach back in 84, and I did a lot of predictions about terrorism and all things that are happening now because I could see the stagnation in our society, and that would lead to that, and infiltration, and that's obviously what happened. Now I see a stagnation within our immune system, and so if you know, and all these drugs people are getting on, people living beyond their means, and women having, you know, a menopause symptoms too young because they don't reach their spiritual purpose. You see all this stuff going on, and you know, the government getting more and more control of the people, our constitutional freedoms eroding, taking God out of the classroom, taking a Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, everything out. And you look at history, the fall of the Roman Empire, so obviously we'll fall. We're going to fall big time.
I mean, what do all these events have to do with the Mayans and their calendar?
Well, because it was pretty predictable. The Mayans know society. And they knew, and the American Indians knew it, they knew that our society would overcome the population capabilities of the Earth at some point in time. And so by understanding the fact that the population surpasses the ability of the Earth because we don't have proper birth control, then the only other thing is that we have to, the society itself will introduce diseases like AIDS, and then cancer will come, and all these things, these plagues will come. So it becomes, and then you have to look at the rotation of the Earth around the Pleiades. We go around the Pleiades every 26,827.5 years, and you have 2,250-year ages. So we're coming from the Piscean vibration of the atomic structure into the Aquarian. In the Piscean, everybody's the integrity of the soul at that time was, I believe. So if you're a believer, well, then you have your belief, and the guy across the street does, so you have holy wars to fight over your belief, and that establishes religion. Then you have government to regulate that. You come into the Aquarian Age, we become a little bit more unconscious. We don't need a Bible or a Global 2000 report to see where the Earth is going or what religion's about. We go to a higher thought cause. So we have this higher causal action going on, which the Mayans were very sensitive to, and we have a lower conflict going, so we got a big split going right and going left. And as we come into this higher vibration...
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay. As you go into this higher vibration, what happens is you end up getting a big split. Some people call it the photon belt, okay? And the photon belt is really where the synapses in the brain and that start receiving light to such a frequency that the astral plane, the series of possibilities, starts working into the real plane, and we start becoming what are called etheric. We become transparent. And that's the technology I was talking about with the projector. You know, like everybody would say, California's going to fall off in the sea. I said, BS, not going to happen. I know for a fact in 91 that we had that earthquake then. That was stabilizing the place. It was called the Northridge Plate. Clay, we haven't had an earthquake since 91 because that wasn't a concern because that was dealt with. It was addressed by a certain level of consciousness. It was addressed and fixed. And we can address and fix things all along. But a lot of people don't take care of themselves. And a lot of people, like the Iraqi thing, that's never, the Middle Eastern crisis, it's a dharmic situation. It's been there forever. It'll be there forever. It'll be eliminated in another way. So things will be eliminated as these higher powers and sources, you call them Andromedans and Pleiadians, whatever, as these higher things come in, there will be a homogenization of a lot of things and a lot of falling out, which there will be a lot less people here by the year 2013 than there are now.
Well, that's what I suspect as well. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with Dr. Fred Bell.
Good morning, George.
Hi.
And Dr. Bell, yourself.
Hi.
About 30 years ago or so, my grandfather got a book after he retired, you know, needed something to do. And he got a book on pyramids.
Right.
And he started building these little cardboard pyramids.
Right.
And he used me as a witness. He would take, like, potatoes. He'd leave one out just in the open air.
Yeah.
He would place another one underneath the pyramid, and after a month, the pyramid out in the open was all shriveled up like we would normally see it.
Yeah.
The one under the pyramid was just as crunchy and crisp as ever.
Because it keeps bacteria, the destructive bacteria, from forming and decomposing it.
Right. And
these are all aerobic and anaerobic, by the way. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
My question is, since I don't have that book that he used to have, would you know the geometric dimensions or whatever?
The apex is 5% shorter than the base, always, in a pyramid.
5% shorter?
Yeah, the apex. The four pieces going up are 5% shorter than the base.
And it has to be a four-sided pyramid, right?
Yeah, a four-sided pyramid has to be an octahedron. That defines a certain geometry to make that work, the life force to work.
Okay, because I know also he made a big one to where he would sit underneath it.
Yeah, I'm in one right now like that. We make it more of the best.
You're sitting under one.
Yeah, I've been in one up through this whole show tonight.
And he said he would feel so much better.
Oh, you do? Because it detoxes the entire body. It takes 90 days. Anytime you sleep, we got to be careful what metal you make them out of. Don't use plastic or aluminum because it produces an amphoteric effect or a positive ion effect, and it messes you up. Use natural magnetic steel. Copper is pretty good, but it's a little stiff on the body because the body's usually already toxic with copper anyway. So we use a mild magnetic steel. We actually sell these things for different sizes.
If you could afford it, what would a gold pyramid do for you?
We use a gold capstone. It would drain your bank account to make it, you know, if it was big to go over your bed. But secondly, it would be overkill. So it's better just plate stuff, you know. So we use the gold plate, but we gold plate all our products, but our great big pyramids, you couldn't plate like we have. I'm inside of a 10-foot pyramid right now. To plate this thing, it cost you too much money. People couldn't buy it, you know.
The fact that the pyramids of Giza had capstones, probably gold-plated, what did that do for them?
It focuses the energy and projects it down. When you use gold, which is, you know, the 18-karat gold up is what we use because gold is an octahedron from 18-karat up. From 17-karat down, it won't work. So people say gold has a healing effect anyway. Well, it doesn't have it has a healing effect, but the body always heals itself. Gold does is block radiations out that kill the body's own healing ability. So I always tell people with all these kinds of things that we do, and what other people do also, is remember the last thing is your body has to heal itself. No object, no vitamin, nothing will do that for you, but they'll sure speed up the process by taking all those barriers down, which is causing the body to, you know, there's lots of things that jumpstart the healing system. So by putting a capsule on the top, it focuses the energy back down inside. That's what it does.
All right, Wild Card Line, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Mary Collins. I had sent you a fast blast from Nashville. Our broadcast actually got interrupted tonight for 20 minutes right near South Carolina.
I heard that.
Yeah, but my question for Dr. Bell is, if he has any insight when in meditations you start seeing geometric shapes that come in a variety of colors.
Well, everybody has their own perception of what meditation is. The meditation is clearing, distilling your mind of all your thoughts. And so if you need to see geometry for some form of healing, and there are certain divine geometric forms that do appear in people doing meditation, yeah, that's part of the program, but it's not the whole program. The idea is to clear yourself of everything and see nothing, and then reach a higher level that way. But usually in the process of cleansing, you will see some forms. If you add fire breathing to it, it will intensify those forms. If you want to do some shape chasing, you might say, you know, do a breathing exercise with it. It'll enhance it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are there any, like, books or anything that would have more information about what these shapes might represent, what energy?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of books. I don't know what's currently out there, but There's a place called the Bodhi Tree, if you're out, ever out in California. Then my friend Stan and Phil own that, and there's so many books in there about meditation. I'm sure there's lots of books back down there, too. Where do you live, in Nashville?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure. I know there's some good books, metaphysical book stores down there. Just go in there and ask for those kinds of books.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for answering my question. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bye. I noticed that the foreword of this book, Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light, is done by our dear friend Brad Steiger.
Yeah, Brad's written a lot of books about me, and we've done a lot of books together. Yeah, Brad's great. He did a book, we're doing it right now, called The Promise, which is the story of my life with Sannyasi. It's kind of a novelized version of how this book that you've got in your hands actually came into fruition. And he wrote that.
Sannyasi being a Pleiadian?
Yeah, the Pleiadian lady, yeah.
Was she also involved with Billy Meyer?
Yeah, she was. She came to him in 1975. And of course, Billy got a little bit possessive with the knowledge, and he thought he was the only contactee on the planet, which there were several Pleiadian contactees, of which Sannyasi was a part of. There was a guy named Kessel, which was her brother, and she had a sister named Playa that was also involved, and then a guy named Patah was her father. It's interesting that Patah was also the father of Imhotep, which was the God that brought the religion and medical science to Africa, 15,000 years ago. So there's a whole lot of relationship between Pleiadian names and some of these esoteric names in Egyptology.
All right, stay with us, Fred. We'll be back with you. We'll take more phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM.
Get it in writing with the After Dark newsletter. Subscribe by calling 1-888-727-5505.
Week, so this is a good place to take a break and stop.
I like the guy.